How did we become a world where facts, shared truths, have lost their power to hold us together as a community, as a country, globally? How have we allowed the proliferation of alternative facts, hoaxes, even conspiracy theories, to destroy our trust in institutions, leaders, and legitimate experts? Journalist Stephen Brill documents the forces and people from Silicon Valley to Madison Avenue to Moscow to Washington that have created and exploited this world of chaos and division and offers practical solutions for what can be done about it. As a co-founder of NewsGuard, a company that tracks online misinformation, Stephen Brill has observed the rise of fake news from a front row seat. His new book is The Death of Truth, How Social Media and the Internet Gave Snake Oil Salesmen and Demagogues the Weapons They Needed to Destroy Trust and Polarize the World, and What We Can Do About It. Stephen Brill is the best-selling author of The Teamsters, America's Bitter Pill, and Tailspin. He has written for The New York Times, The New Yorker, and is co-founder and CEO of NewsGuard, as well as founder of The American Lawyer and Brill's Content Magazine. It's a great pleasure to welcome Stephen Brill to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, glad to be with you.
You are co-founder and co-CEO of NewsGuard, which rates the reliability of news and information websites, and founder of The American Lawyer, Brill's Content Magazine, Court TV. I'm interested in how you came to this particular project of looking at the death of truth of something that I think is that we're learning over these years of just how insidious that can be.
Well, what I tried to examine in the book, you know, looking back at the work I've been doing for the last few years at NewsGuard and my general experience as a journalist, what I tried to examine is how we got to a place where, as a society, as a community, we no longer even agree on the same set of basic facts. So everything has become a matter of opinion. Was Barack Obama born in the United States? Who got the most votes in 2020? Will the COVID vaccine kill you? And what I really focused on was the information environment that we now live in, where most of the people get most of their information online from social media. And social media, the business model, is to send people to the most inflammatory and unreliable content. And that's a big part of the problem. And then, as I outline in the book, another big part of the problem is that the way advertising is now bought in the world is it's done mostly through an algorithmic auction, which doesn't pay any attention to the place where the advertisement may appear, but only pays attention to who might be looking at it. So the result of that is that lots of hoax websites or Russian propaganda sites get advertising from big-name brands and get financial support from big-name brands that have no idea that that's where they're advertising. I tried to put all that together and explain it and then explain how we can work our way back from there.
I found the advertising aspect just scary and fascinating, but the key to that, and you just said this, but the advertisers have no idea, right, where their ads are being placed. It's this automated auction process. But we're talking about some 15 million ad impressions every second of every day, I believe, is the number you give.
That is the number I use. It's jaw-dropping. I mean, you couldn't expect any advertiser or their ad agency to know where those ads are going. They can't keep track of them. This method of advertising called programmatic advertising is totally opaque, and the ad agencies and the ad tech companies have basically victimized all their advertisers.
And what they're doing for those advertisers is the brands that we know, the brands that we use, are ultimately funding disinformation and misinformation.
Well, they're funding bad journalism or just plain hoaxes at the expense of good journalism. There's a passage in the book, for example, where I explain that the night that Nancy Pelosi's husband was attacked at their home, a fake website called the Santa Monica Observer, which NewsGuard had identified and warned was a website that there's a hoax website. It, for example, it had reported in a prior year that Hillary Clinton had died and that a body double was substituting for her. Well, that website, the Santa Monica Observer, filed a report that night that said that that Paul Pelosi had actually been in an encounter with a gay prostitute, which was totally false, totally made up. But Elon Musk retweeted it. Donald Trump Jr. retweeted it. It went viral. And whenever someone saw that tweet, it linked to the website, the Santa Monica Observer, which got thousands and thousands of thousands of eyeballs, which resulted in them getting thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of programmatic advertising that didn't go, for example, to the San Francisco Chronicle, which is a real newspaper that pays real reporters to write real stories, including what actually happened to Mr. Pelosi.
Stephen Brill is our guest. The name of the new book is The Death of Truth. I am curious because you mentioned Elon Musk, but you point this out in the book that if Elon Musk, in his role as running Tesla, if they put out a bad car, a car that's dangerous, they can be sued. But the example you just gave, if he retweets something and there is information that is put on the X platform, he cannot be sued because of Section 230, which gives me the opportunity to ask you to explain Section 230.
Sure. The simple explanation is that Section 230 is the best example ever of the law of unintended consequences. Section 230 was passed in 1996, before there were any social media platforms, and it was meant to protect the old dial-up, you know, email companies, AOL, CompuServe, and Prodigy, which, in addition to letting people pay and identify themselves and have email accounts, also allowed people to go into, you know, go into chat rooms or groups if they were interested in sports or food or travel, whatever it was. And a couple of times, people had gone on to those chat platforms and said something defamatory about someone else, and the victim, you know, wanted to sue the platforms. So one of the platforms had a policy where they screened that stuff, but something had gotten through, and they were held liable because they said that they screened stuff, and therefore they are the same as a publisher. The other platform was not held liable because it said, we screened nothing, and therefore they were immune from liability, which really didn't make sense. I mean, why should the good guys who try to do something be liable and those who just try to do nothing be not liable? So what Congress did was they inserted a three-paragraph amendment into this giant Telecommunications Reform Act of 1996 that basically gave platforms immunity from liability for what people post on the platform. But again, the context was, you know, these were paid services. People had to identify themselves, and the volume was like next to nothing. And the business model was not, let's attract the most eyeballs so we can get the most advertising. People paid to be members of AOL. So, you know, go to, 10 years later when the social media platforms are out there with a billion times the content, people posting everywhere, and they're suddenly immune from liability at the same time that their business model, which is advertising, their business model has created algorithms designed to send people the most inflammatory, unreliable content. But they're not liable for it. So Elon Musk is not in any way liable for someone who posts on Twitter, who's claiming to be a doctor but is not a doctor, and posts on Twitter that the COVID vaccine will kill you, or that fruit pits will cure your cancer. He's not liable for that. But if he decides, gee, I don't want to have airbags or seatbelts in my Teslas, he is liable for that.
So you give another example that if Fox News was a social media platform, it could not have been sued by Dominion voting systems. And
exactly
that what Fox broadcast about Dominion was carried on the social media platforms, and that went fine. They were not sued on that.
So, right. All the bad things and untrue things said about Dominion on Fox were also said on the social media platforms. In fact, the evidence that came out before trial was that Fox was really operating with the same kind of, you know, algorithm that the social media platforms were operating with, which is they geared their content and their guests and the questions meant to please their audience, who, you know, were people who wanted to believe that Trump had not lost the election. So they were sort of the equivalent, the television equivalent of an algorithm designed to egg on that audience. If they were a social media platform, they'd be immune from that. But because they're a cable television channel, they were not immune from the decisions they made to have guests on who spouted, you know, defamatory, libelous stuff, and they didn't challenge it in any way. In fact, they encouraged it and repeated it.
So in what may be one of the most naive questions I've ever asked, but in looking at their intent, is that a byproduct of what they're doing, or is that consciously malicious?
You're talking about Fox?
Yes.
Well, I think the evidence that came out before the trial in a discovery was that this was deliberate. In fact, there were emails that said that the hosts of the various shows didn't believe this stuff either, but they put it on because the audience wanted to hear it. Well, that's exactly what you could say about, you know, any of the social media platforms. You know, I assume that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't actually believe that, you know, fruit pits will cure cancer, or that that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. But that's the kind of stuff you see all the time on, Facebook and other social media platforms.
When you look at this as to the problems, where does that leave us with our relationship, in your mind, with social media and social media platforms? As here we are in an election year, and the misinformation, the disinformation, the information, what do we do to make that a better system, and how much of that is on us, how much of it is on the social media companies themselves?
It is on us, but it's also on the social media companies themselves. I mean, you could argue that if the government stopped requiring seatbelts, that people might make the decision, I'm only going to get into a car that has a seatbelt. But that doesn't mean the government should not require seatbelts. So I think our attitude, the whole point of the book is our attitude about the social media platforms has to change. And what I mean by that is their attitude is that every 6 months they go in front of Congress and they apologize and say, we know we have to do better. We're trying really hard and we're really, really sorry. But what they're really saying is that because of, a million people a minute want to post on our platform, we really can't control the safety of that content. It can have, false medical cures, political misinformation, Russian disinformation. We really can't control it. So if someone spontaneously gets on our platform and, live videos a massacre, at a mosque in New Zealand, well, we're really, really sorry. We try our best, but we can't do it. That doesn't make any sense. If you walked into a restaurant today and looked up at the wall, there'd be a sign that says occupancy by more than, 200 people is dangerous and unlawful. The restaurant can't take the position that 1,000 people want to come into this restaurant, so we're going to let 1,000 people come in, even if it's dangerous. There isn't any other industry, if the shipping industry said, so many people want to use our ships that we can't really take the time to make sure they're safe. And if they crash into a bridge, we're really, really sorry, but there's nothing we can do about it. No industry has that protection that the social media companies have. However, as I point out in the book, there is something we can do without Congress changing Section 230. None of the proposals I make in the book depend on Congress, because Congress, as we know, really can't even name a post office, let alone, you know, do anything substantive. But right. One of the things that people listening can do, and that everyone can do, is file a complaint with the FTC. You just have to go online to the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission's job is to enforce contracts that companies make with consumers. And as I explain in the book, if you go online to Facebook or YouTube or any other platform, they have terms of service. And those terms of service say that they will not tolerate harmful misinformation, state-sponsored disinformation, violence, hate speech. It's basically a whole list of all the things that they do tolerate, because they accept as much volume as they can possibly get without taking any steps or enough steps to protect it. So they're violating their terms of service, and the FTC can sue them for that, just the way the FTC has sued and collected billions of dollars from Facebook for violating their privacy promises in those exact same terms of service.
We'll end with this question, but we have heard going back for a long time, but let's say the 2016 election, the 2020 election, of the concerns and how information was compromised. So as we go, as we're knee deep into 2024, how do you look? Has anything improved?
No, it's gotten worse. The social media platforms, if anything, have pulled back on their efforts to protect people from unsafe content. And with generative AI, which we haven't talked about, but which plays a big role in the book, with generative AI, artificial intelligence, that becomes a force multiplier, because it's so much easier to create hoaxes and deep fakes, you know, with fake videos, with fake audios, and put them online at a scale and with targeting that was unimaginable before artificial intelligence. So if anything, it looks like, at least for now, we're headed in the wrong direction.
The name of the new book is The Death of Truth, How Social Media and the Internet Gave Snake Oil Salesmen and Demagogues the Weapons They Needed to Destroy Trust and Polarize the World, and What We Can Do About It. Stephen Brill, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Be well.
Nice to talk to you. Take
and
care.
To you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Again, the name of the book is The Death of Truth. It is published by Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.